Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we bring the culture to horticulture. So today's culture is going to be of the small, tiny variety kind. So listen up, all you 1973 Borrowers movie fans, one of my favorite movies. Listen up for the best how-to information in creating a magical, tiny garden world of your own. It's actually just this topic that got me started with landscape design, actually. It was first grade, and with a friend of mine at recess, we dug a series of tunnels among tree roots in our schoolyard in Northern Virginia. And this really became an obsession for us. So for several weeks, we schemed and planned about how the tunnels would connect, and we made hallways and open rooms, and we fantasized about who would live in this tiny house, the fantastical family and their friends living among the tree roots. We made furniture out of twigs and twine, and it was just endless fun.
I didn't know that about you, Alice.
Yeah, yeah.
The secret world you created.
Yeah, this was really the, like, inspiration, really, for design and how fun it can be to make things. We brought in fabric swatches, and we made carpets to cover the dirt floor. And then, of course, we got shut down by the teachers because we'd basically made a city underneath this tree and severely compromised the root system. So, you know, I learned a little that year. But it really did begin my fascination with making play worlds and fantasizing and creating environments. So installation is still my favorite part of our garden job, as Carmen knows. And mm-hmm. That, of course, and the dirt hut that Laura Ingalls Wilder lived
in. Oh, I love that. I was pretty obsessed with that, too. Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah. What, you know, 1973 girl isn't?
Yeah.
So this is actually a very ancient hobby, garden design in miniature, and one that really transverses all continents and cultures. The miniature garden speaks to all of us with delight. So today, we are going to speak with miniature garden expert, designer, and author Janet Calvo and her book, Gardening in Miniature, Create Your Own Tiny Living World by Timber Press. And Janet's going to tell us the how-to and where to find and give us the inspiration so that we can all be great designers.
But before that, we have to do our horticultural honor roll. And in keeping with the topic today, we are honoring Paul Busey, a Kentucky boy whose work is awe-inspiring. His studio is called Applied Imagination, and he is the master builder behind this Lilliput scale village of New York City landmarks that he renders with birch bark and lotus pods, beech nuts, and kumquat slices. For two decades, the whimsical monuments, mansions, and bridges interspersed with model trains have drawn tens of thousands of visitors annually to the New York Botanic Garden Holiday Train Show. And you just recently saw it, Alice.
Yes, thank you to Carmen. Yeah. She got us tickets. And
yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's in the conservatory, so it's among all the conservatory plants, and it is miles and miles of train and garden.
And it's New York City in miniature, the landmarks in miniature.
Right. So let's get on the phone with Janet. I think she's already on the line. Janet, thank you for being patient with our delay. We had a terrible traffic accident on the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. So before we speak with her, I want to give a little introduction to her. She is an artist, a miniaturist, a gardener, and an entrepreneur. Her first mini garden was a tiny stage backdrop that grew and wove itself together for years. And she was inspired by the little garden's long life and easy maintenance, and thus started a business called Two Green Thumbs Miniature Garden Center in 2001. She lives with her husband in a full-size house and has a full-size garden in Seattle, Washington. She's won many garden and miniature show awards and has written numerous articles and blogs. And her blog is at minigardener.wordpress.com. So welcome, Janet.
Hi, thank you for having me, Alice and Carmen.
Well, again, thanks for your patience. I'm so sorry we had the delay.
Oh, it's okay. I hope everyone's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So the title and the cover photograph on your book is actually what caught my eye. I actually bought this book at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. And tell us how you got started in the design and, you know, tell us about that backdrop.
Well, for that particular garden, and I call her the cover girl.
Uh-huh.
she was actually planted. She, as in the elm, it's an elf dwarf spruce. Is the big tree?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's
and
fantastic.
She was planted in an in-ground garden at my old house. And when we moved here to our new place about 4 years ago, we dug up the whole miniature garden. And I realized I knew it before, but I didn't realize to this magnitude what a great trunk and root system had been happening and growing underneath this wonderful tree. And it wasn't until I lifted it out of the ground and put it in a pot to move it into our new house that I realized it's like, wait a minute, I now have to put this spruce in a pot because I want to be able to enjoy the root structure and the trunk structure. It's called the Newberry in the bonsai terms.
Okay.
And then of course the globe, the elf maintains that wonderful round globe shape. And then, of course, the bowl just came naturally.
Uh-huh.
Just to complete the circle and make a big circle of miniature garden goodness. And then, of course, when the timber press photographer came over, she kind of zeroed in on this garden, which, and then of course the editors had to come back and recreate it for the front cover.
Oh.
So history is made.
So
how
many gardens have you made, and do they all still exist, and are you kind of moving them around?
I lost count after about 3,000 gardens.
Wow.
I used to sell at all the street markets and garden shows here in the greater Seattle area for years.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of those gardens got sold, and some were installed in ground. So it's all kinds of gardens, and I also make like 4-inch gardens, which helps the numbers add up quickly, type thing.
Yeah.
After a couple of years after making them and selling them, I realized I have to keep some because I have to see how they grow in, and that's my mission this year is to show all those gardens that have been growing in. And in the book, you can also see some of the older gardens and the bigger trees that I've been incorporating into bigger miniature gardens. Because that's one of the delights is that the trees just take on this bonsai quality.
Yeah.
And without the maintenance and without the babysitting, and they become big miniature trees for the miniature garden.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask about that. Bonsai is a pretty time intensive and specific kind of garden art. How much work, you know, how much maintenance compared to some bonsai, like a typical bonsai is a miniature garden once you've created it?
Well, the art of bonsai is actually plant in a tray,
mm-hmm.
and you have to basically cram the plant roots into this tiny tray,
yeah.
and by compromising the root system, you have to bring to the plant the nourishment and the water.
Right.
So with miniature gardening, we're just planting it in a regular pot.
Okay,
and it's right plant, right place, and I stress that because that's where the low maintenance comes from.
Okay,
and so of course most of our plants that we do play with are outdoor trees.
Okay,
we put them in a regular pot, and we put them outside, and we water them in the dry months, and make sure they get enough light, and especially in the Seattle area, and
right,
and then they just become these wonderful, wonderful bonsai looking trees naturally.
Right.
And there is some maintenance that we borrow from the bonsai world.
Okay.
We there's a couple of points of as far as any downward drooping branches cut off, any branches that are underneath the trunk systems are cut off. Mm-hmm. All the bottommost branches are cut off to make it look to show some more trunk.
Uh-huh.
To make it look like that tree.
Right, right, right.
And then of course, we do some pruning inside the tree, too.
Right, to open it up. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so, but it's dead easy.
Okay.
Really is. They really are a delight to grow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really fascinating, and especially for people that don't have any garden space.
Yeah.
It's a way to enjoy a garden and to create it.
Yeah.
And I can see where the obsession would start.
Like if you just have a balcony or a terrace and, you know, and then the great thing is it's portable.
Right.
You know, you
yeah.
can take it with you. One of my favorites
exactly.
in the book is a pond in a pot. I mean, it's hard enough to create a water feature in a mm-hmm. regular garden, but you've created a garden, and then a water feature.
A feature in a feature, right.
Well, you have to have the miniature water features for the miniature garden.
Yeah, right. Great. With the statue of Venus,
yeah.
right? Isn't that great? I love
yeah,
this one.
It's yeah. a lot of fun. Well, the world's your oyster, because you can basically do whatever you want. You know, it really becomes your world, and you can choose whatever you want to grow and or not. You can plunk at it. You can cut out a little miniature shrub and put it in a new one if you want some summer color or spring color. It's
right.
adaptable.
Right.
Get your fork out. Do some raking. Go to work Monday morning going, yeah, I worked in my garden too.
Garden warrior, right.
Show the pictures, you know.
Yeah. So a quote that I loved from your book was, miniature gardening is that sweet spot where craft and gardening intersect at such an intimately creative place, it can spur your imagination at no other place. And then you go on to talk about darkened doorways, adding intrigue, and, you know, who lives there and who's on the other side. So when you are creating a garden, do you start with the plants first? Because each garden is so unique in that you have, you know, accoutrement, you have, like, accessories that, you know, sometimes you have people, sometimes you have, you know, other like architectural features, pergolas, furniture,
yeah, yeah.
you know, all that. How does it start?
A perfect way into it is where you're going to have it.
Okay.
Like, where is it going to grow?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because ultimately the choices are pretty much overwhelming because
mm-hmm.
there's so many plants you can use. And there's so many accessories you can use. So the styles and themes are endless.
Right.
So basically, where are you going to have the garden when it's done? Indoors, outdoors, in a pot, in ground. Is
right.
it small? Is it big? And then you can totally whittle down your plant choices and start with the tree, and match the tree horticultural requirements to the place that you're going to have it.
Uh huh.
And then the ground covers or the miniature garden bedding plants, as we like to call them. are just chosen to match the tree and the light and the soil and the water requirements.
Okay.
And then your bedding plants can be anything from ground covers, alpine plants, baby plants, rockery plants.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just slow growing and small leafed is what we're after.
Mm-hmm. And do you start back to the tree question? Do you start with dwarf material? Like, are you purposely seeking out dwarf varieties?
Yes. Yes, for the trees, we're purposely seeking out either baby plants that don't mind being pruned, like cotonia asters and boxwoods don't mind being pruned and kept small.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And for the conifers, we like the miniature and dwarf conifers,
mm-hmm.
and that's describing the growth rate. That's not describing the actual tree.
Right,
so
right.
We try to stay within 1 to 3 inches per year.
Right.
And back to the bonsai, we kind of follow what bonsai artists use for their bonsai art, because we know that the plants that they've chosen already like to be in a container. They don't mind being pruned,
yeah.
and they hopefully can tolerate a little bit of wiggle room as far as drying out and that kind of thing.
Do you ever start with like an established bonsai plant and then kind of work the garden design around that? Because you can buy very nice bonsai, you know, that are already potted, and you know, you could
And if you wanted to, you can even put the bonsai right in the pot and all.
Right.
But note that you're still using a bonsai plant.
Right. True.
So if you do keep it in right in the pot and plant the whole pot in the miniature garden as a miniature garden tree, you still need to pull the whole tree out and maintain the root base every 2 or 3 years or whatever the bonsai tree dictates.
Right.
And then the other side is to use that bonsai tree and plant it right in the miniature garden. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden the plant's going to have a growth spurt because it's going to have new soil.
Right.
It's going to say,
yeah,
hey, I'm free at last.
Yeah.
And start to grow. So there might be some sort of a vigorous growth to come out of the
repotting, right.
Yeah. But it kind of really depends on what kind of tree you're.
Yeah.
We're talking about, yeah.
Well, Carmen and I had a store several years ago,
yeah,
and we had these amazing dawn redwood bonsais.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
you're from Seattle, so you're familiar with
right,
the redwood. But holy cow, that was just a world unto itself.
Like, well, it was basically turned on its side.
Right.
Right.
And they were
like
multi-stemmed. And it was just a forest. It was unbelievable.
And people loved
wow,
them. And people, we would sell them for $700 or $800, and
yeah,
it was no problem selling
that
them.
Beautiful.
But, yeah,
yeah.
But keeping them alive, you know, that was
very tough.
It was
yeah,
tough. I mean, people. This.
Yeah.
It sounds like the miniature gardens are a little bit easier to manage.
Yeah.
You know, because you're working with, if you start with the conditions, the
mm-hmm,
right conditions. And I wanted to ask you about scale, Janet. So one of the challenges, I bet, is to try to get the ground cover
right
to the right scale, you know,
yeah,
for it to be really, truly small.
Right.
And I think that's really fascinating to me. And I noticed in the book you have a list of plants that, you know, for each kind of application, you know, trees that work well under, you know, certain conditions. Is that one of the biggest challenges, finding plants that are truly small leafed? You know?
Well, with my handy dandy list inside my book, it's no longer a challenge.
Yeah. But you had to figure
Thank
it
you,
out.
Janet.
Yes. We don't have to do.
Yes. And there are. See, and that's a little bit of a controversy there, because people are saying, oh, it's got small leaves, it'll fit in my miniature garden. Well, like something, for example, like the culinary thyme.
Uh-huh,
when,
yeah,
when you see those little darling lemon thyme little plants in the springtime in those 4-inch pots with those teeny tiny leaves and it smells like lemon, you just drool about the possibilities of it staying small in the miniature garden and have this wonderful little
right,
shrub in your little miniature garden. But it's culinary thyme. It wants to explode.
It's
going to
take over, right.
It
yeah,
wants to be eaten.
Yeah.
So it's going to, and it grows to, I don't know, 14 by 16 inches in one season.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So the ground covers and the alpine plants and the rocky plants that we choose are slower growing too.
Right.
And of course, that said, there's a little bit of wiggle room. Like one of my favorite plants to use in a pot is ajuga,
mm-hmm,
is a bugle.
Yes,
and
we
that's
love that.
Invasive in
yeah,
ground. That
yeah,
can really spread. But in the pot, it doesn't mind being confined. And every spring, I just pinch off the runners.
Right.
And it can stay there for years. One of my oldest gardens is 9 years old. I just pulled it apart for the garden show coming up in next month here in Seattle, and it's still fine. It still wants to live.
That's
even
cool.
even though I cut it back every year and it's shoved in a pot
right
for 9 years
right.
So I think that's part of the beauty, is that there's a lot of exploration as far as how we can use these plants in containers and confined conditions. What works, what doesn't, and that's basically why I approached Timber Press for the book. It's like, hey, I've got all this groundwork together that I've been studying for the last 10 years,
uh-huh,
and that's basically what the book goes into, is what I've learned
right
with this gardening in miniature.
Well, I think that's what makes the book so great, is that, you know, this is tried and true. This isn't just some like fantasy art project. Like, this is really
yeah,
what works.
Janet, it works.
Yeah, Janet, yeah, hang on, we have to
take a break. Yeah.
Stay on the line. We have a note from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Intrigued by Obesity on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Kane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to kane5.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants. Alice and I are here with Janet Calvo, the author of Gardening in Miniature, Create Your Own Tiny Living World. Welcome back, Janet. Let's get right into the materials, the stone pavers, the bricks for paths. How do you do this? I mean, you're in some of the gardens, you're building walls, pergolas, dining tables, bridges over streams. Tell us about the materials that you use and where people can find them.
When I first was toying with this idea back in the year 2000, I was scouring the internet for other people that were doing this, and it took me a long time to find fellow people that were actually into this hobby. It was a valid hobby, but it was never marketed or brought to the forefront.
Right.
So I was looking for a business idea at the time, so that's why I started twogreenthumbs.com. And that's my miniature garden center, which has everything to do with everything you need for a miniature garden.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And in doing so, I created a mini patio mix kit, which is my solution, because every time I went to water my patio, I just wash it all away.
Right.
So I developed a way to install a custom patio inside in ground or in your container that you can put together. And it goes together dry, so you have time to get a pattern, a mosaic pattern, or use your grandmother's china that you just broke last night, or or something like that in the patio material or in the patio. And then when you activate it with a mist of water, it solidifies. And
oh, that's great!
Becomes a permanent miniature garden patio, and it's the patio with the accessories that actually deliver the scale to the
yes.
The accessories can push the scale of the trees around. But ultimately, it's the patio material and the accessories that we use. And you can find, and there's a bunch of solutions now at your local independent garden centers, as well as through my store online at twogreenthumbs.com.
Right. So what's your biggest, what's the style, I should say, that most people are buying? Like, what's the most popular kind of accessory that people are buying?
I think it's a place to sit.
Uh-huh.
In general, it's furniture.
Okay.
That's so interesting.
And as I say, it gives the eye a place to sit.
Uh-huh.
And it gives, so it, you can almost picture yourself sitting it on that chair or at that table and chair set.
And is there a particular bench that sells, like style-wise, or is it?
No, I don't think so. It's just
okay.
Yeah, the fairy garden idea has actually totally exploded in conjunction with the miniature garden. But the idea with that is I want the garden for myself. I don't want to share it with the fairies.
Okay. So yeah, I agree with you.
Once you put a fairy in there, it becomes the fairy's garden.
It's very specific,
it's like,
right?
It's like, that's my garden.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm looking, and you have an extensive. I mean, you have everything from picket fences to mini pink flamingos on your site, right? Like, you have all kinds of stuff. I'm looking in your book right now, Janet, and I'm looking on page 145, right? There's a miniature garden, and it looks like a full-size garden.
Right.
I'm looking at the scale. I'm looking at the teak chair, the fence. It's extraordinary.
Right.
Yeah, you know. It is, and that's what made me put my fingers in the photograph a few years ago. I started sticking my fingers in the photograph because people wouldn't realize it was miniature.
Right, they would just think that's some like estate, you know, in some like fabulous place.
Yeah, and actually that was one of the validating points that made me explore this a lot further. It was when I was working at a local nursery here in Seattle. I brought in a picture of my miniature garden and showed it to one of those walking encyclopedias. You know those people that know every plant?
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Yeah, it was her, and I showed it to her and Candy, and she passed me back the photograph 2 seconds later. She goes, "That's nice, Janet." And I was missed. I was missed for about 2 seconds. It was like she didn't realize it was only 10 inches wide.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it was that trickery or illusion.
Yeah.
But it's not an illusion. It's not a trick. It's real life. You know, it's a real garden.
Yeah.
You know? So
now, do you have some people that just want you to make their garden, so you sell them a whole garden?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I love the people that just give me a budget and tell me to make something.
Yeah.
And other people would like it to match their interior, match the pot with the interior of the house or the deck, and you really recreate the larger garden in miniature.
Right.
And that's really fun.
That's
amazing. I was thinking about that application for clients, you know, as like architects will build a model of the house.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking, why not like build a model of what they're, you know, as part of the design process? Like,
I would love to collaborate with a full size garden designer.
Yeah.
That would be very cool. Yeah, give us an idea of what, I mean, I'm sure it ranges, but what's the sort of broad range of budgets that people should think about if they wanted you to make a miniature garden for them, soup to nuts, everything?
Well, my ideal garden is about 22 inches wide, and that usually comes in about 275 to 325 to start, and then it depends what other accessories they want.
Sure.
And of course, the pot drives the price too.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, that's very reasonable, Janet. I mean, that's very reasonable. You know, starting point.
I've said 550.
So, do you ever do terrariums too, Janet? Because this kind of bridges into terrariums a bit.
It does, and quite honestly, I can't grow a terrarium if I was paid to.
I feel the same way.
I don't know what it is. I'm not sure. I think I just assume that it takes care of itself, and it doesn't.
Right. It ends up getting all slimy and like.
Yeah.
I love them too. I love to do succulents.
Carmen's good at terrariums, but I can do them, but then they never last. You know, they'll look pretty for a few weeks.
They're tricky. They definitely are tricky. I like to push the envelope too. Like, I'll put succulents into a terrarium, which is not the right thing to do, but I love how they look under glass.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm always experimenting with gravel and charcoal and seeing how long and how much to water.
That would be an open terrarium, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But
yeah,
it's fun to like play with sand and rocks and, you know, just like to balance out the textures and contrast.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah, but as you said, I can't make them last, and I think that's why I love making them, and I love them for the first couple of weeks, as you said, but you don't get any growing satisfaction, or I don't get any growing satisfaction.
No, well, they don't really grow. They can't really grow in the terrarium. Not really.
Yeah.
So, Janet, we were at a trade show. I think it was either the San Francisco trade show or the Boston trade show, or maybe it was both.
I know what you're going to talk about.
Carmen and I met this guy, and I'm sure you'll know who he is. He was dressed as a leprechaun, and he goes to the trade shows, and he's from the Bay Area, I think, and all he deals with are
miniature plants.
Do you know this guy?
No, what name does he go under?
Well, his company...
He was dressed as a leprechaun. That's why we noticed him.
he was a short man.
Yeah, he was a little man.
He was short in stature, and he was dressed as a leprechaun. He only sold varieties that were dwarf in
size. And they were
woodies.
They were
like rhododendrons and azaleas. Truly dwarf, like truly dwarf plants. You know, deciduous trees, shrubs, all kinds of stuff, evergreens.
Oh, nice.
And I think his...
I want to meet him.
Well, and
he had
rainbow suspenders on.
Yes. And he had...
and a green wig.
It was called the Miniature Kingdom,
right?
I think it was called the Miniature...
Mini Plant Kingdom.
Yes, that was it.
Do you know him?
I've spoken to him before.
Yes.
I've yet to go down to his nursery, yeah.
Where
He's
is he?
He's been at it for a long time.
Is he in the Bay Area?
I think he... Northern California.
Northern.
He's been catering a lot to the railroad garden industry over the
years. That's right.
And that's another industry that we tap and just kind of leave the trains at the station and just play with the plants.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah.
Have you ever come to the New York Botanic Garden train show?
No, I haven't. I heard the Paul Busey...
you should look him up.
Nod.
It is
I've drooled over his pictures on the internet. And he actually does the Chicago Botanical Garden and a few other botanical gardens around the country.
Yeah. And all of those materials are basically found in the woods around his house.
I know. Aren't
which
they
is
magical?
So cool.
It's very cool. I almost went that route until I found found out about the garden and the growing, and it's the plants and the growing the plants that really tugs at my heart.
Yeah, us too.
Yeah,
us
too. We have to agree. It's great to create fantastical theatrical,
but without the plants, it doesn't mean anything.
And
you know?
For the plants to actually be growing and thriving is really special.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's a garden. It's just a garden. It's
exactly.
A garden.
Well, I'm sorry that we are out of time. It's been a great show, and we highly recommend your book. It is really fun to read, and I think everybody should get involved with this hobby, and they should buy from you because you know what you're doing.
And I think it's great. I want to add, it's great to do with kids because a lot of times children are overwhelmed, and you know, or maybe you don't want them in your garden because you know.
Shh. Yeah.
But this is something you can create together, and you know, it's like having. Yeah. An outdoor dollhouse, kind of. Do you know what I mean? But a living environment, you know.
It really is for all levels of gardening too, because the experienced gardener is always looking for new ways to grow, and this is yet another way to grow.
Yeah.
So,
well, thank you.
Old and experience for everybody.
And thank you so much for writing the book and sharing your passion, you know, with the public and with us today. It's just brilliant and really fun. And I'm actually I have a little tiny rent controlled apartment in Brooklyn, and I have a garden in front. It's all containers, and I think this year I'm going to make some special scene in one of the big pots just
for
you. I
think that'd be great.
Oh, very fun.
I'll send you
let
photos.
Me know if I can help you.
Okay, I'll send you some photos.
Oh, cool.
Thanks, Janet. Carmen,
thanks,
you want to do the wrap-up?
Thanks, yes. Thank you for listening to We Dig Plants. I wanted to jump in and remind everybody that we are going to be at a trade show ourselves next week, the 28th, at Plantorama. If you guys are in the New York area and you want to come by and meet us and also meet some other hortheads, come by. If you come to the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, if you pay for admission or you're a member, you can get into the trade show for free. If you want to go to the seminars, which are going to be great, as well, you just have to become a member of Metro Hort, right?
And you have to pre-register.
So please, there's more information on this on our Facebook page. Become our friend on Facebook. Win some garden swag each week because we select one of our friends at random to win. It's We Dig Plants, Groundworks, Inc. Thank you, Joe, for engineering and Jack Inslee for producing. And to you guys for listening. Happy gardening.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.